Hello, I'm here during the lunch rush with Janice, who owns her own food truck.
Best cheesesteaks in town.
Janice traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for her food truck business. We're here where she needs us most.
They sure are.
We make it so easy for her to save, with customised coverage that grows with her business. Sorry, I just get so emotional talking about saving folks money.
Not this onion I'm chopping?
It's just so beautiful. Oh, yeah, nice, the onion.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
It's funny. The very first thing I recorded, I wrote down on a notepad in my car and off a YouTube beat. I had two phones at the time. I hooked the old phone up to the current phone's hotspot and played the beat in the car speakers, recorded a voice memo on the current phone with the notepad sitting right there. And I just recorded this 16-bar verse, sent it to Wes, and I said, hey, this is my first true attempt to record.
Yeah.
What do you think? And I'll never forget his words. He said, be more confident, keep going. That's all he said. So I did that. I kept going, kept writing, kept sending him stuff. And finally, he looked at me one day and said, I need to get you in the studio.
Hi guys, it's your girl Nakama, your favorite Jew from the Lou. Welcome back to my podcast. And we are back again. I am so excited about today's guest. Please welcome Wayne Biddick.
How are you? So I'm better known as Wayne B in the music scene, aka student of the game.
Love that.
Yeah, it's funny how that came about actually. Mm-hmm. When I first started doing this music, I was taken under wing by my friend M. West.
Yeah.
And we were recording a song one day, and in one of the lyrics I wrote, I said some about being a student of the game. And M. West looked at me after the recording, and he just said plain and simple, he said, you are a student of the game. So I said, cool, I'm running with that now.
Yeah. I feel like in a tiny little itty bitty way, I can kind of relate to that. Because sometimes I think of the title of the episode while I'm talking to my guests.
Okay.
And then it just comes to me like something, whether they say a certain catchphrase or I say something, I'm like, that's the title of our episode. Let's go.
Love when things organically happen.
Totally. It was such a pleasure talking with you at our pregame. You're such an awesome person. But more than that, it was such a cool experience for me how we met because it was actually another guest who was referenced by another guest. So it's like a ripple effect because first we had John.
Okay.
And then he has this gym where Rosie works out.
Okay.
She works out with him. And so Rosie had such a great time that she was like, I have a few people that I would love to bring into your network. And you were the first person.
So how she presented it was Rose and I went to high school together.
Yeah.
So, you know, and she's one of the two people that I keep in contact with from high school.
Feel that.
And so I actually helped her set up her podcast production wise. Like I showed her how to record essentially, how to mix. And, you know, I produced her intro and outro music. So, I was doing the production engineering for, I want to say about 6 months, but our schedules were just so chaotic. It was hard to, actually schedule time.
Totally.
So, she actually bought the equipment herself and I helped her set it up. And she was always trying to get me to be on her podcast. And I said, no, I don't want to do that while I'm your producer, just because I want to actually focus on creating the product.
Okay.
I don't want to try to influence the product.
Okay.
So when she took it over herself and I was no longer part of the picture, she asked me again if I would want to come on her podcast. And I said, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
And while we were recording, she brought your name up and I said, hey, shoot me the contact info. Like I would love to work with other people.
Yeah. Local
Yeah.
Creatives, local, you know, talent is just so fun. St. Louis is so big and so small at the same time. And once you start networking and putting yourself out there, the next thing you know, it's just ping ponging and everybody's getting, that's how you know each other.
Like St. Louis is the biggest small town in the country.
Literally.
Like everybody knows everybody somehow.
Yeah.
And I'd like to say too, like I'm very impressed with your work. Just, I love your format.
Thank you.
I haven't watched your most recent episodes. I know, I'm a horrible fan.
No, you're totally fine. But
I've seen the growth that you've done over such a short amount of time. Oh. It's very well done. Kudos to you. Like you're going to be the next big podcast in St. Louis. I'm sure of it.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. That makes my heart so full. Like, like literally because it's a lot of hard work, you know? I think I've mentioned this online before, but like I was inspired through my process as I was going on this. I don't remember if I watched Mr. Beast's video on this before or when I was in process.
Okay.
But at some point in the early stages of my podcasting, I saw this video by Mr. Beast about how to be a content creator because I'm always trying to learn. I'm a student of the game of podcasting, you know? And so he talks about how if you want to be a content creator, an influencer, a YouTuber, a podcaster, whatever, mm-hmm. I'm sure this applies the same thing with music, which we'll get into in a second, which is you need to do 100 videos. Mm-hmm. And even if you were to never release them, the confidence that you'll get just from that, what you'll learn about yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Just how to articulate yourself, especially if you're having guests, learning how to have that conversation. He's like, add 100 videos, maybe then you'll be a creator. Until then, you're going to think that all 100 of your videos are amazing and they're going to suck.
Oh, yeah.
And that's okay.
Like, I saw this post on Facebook that is applicable in all areas of life. Your very first song you make, your very first video, your very first podcast, the very first time that you apply yourself to something, that you try to create something or do something, it's not going to be good.
No.
The only way it's going to get good is if you keep going and you keep learning from your mistakes.
Yes.
So I look back on what I first started putting out. I'm like, Jesus, what was I thinking?
Yeah, but you have to do it. It's part of the process.
Oh, 100%.
And I think the fear that so many people have is they have these people who they look up to, whatever industry you're in, who are your role models, mm-hmm. right? And so you want to sound and be like them, but they didn't get there without going through the process.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I think earned me the moniker of student of the game was like when I first was introduced to this genre of music, the thing to be was unique.
Yeah.
Like if you weren't unique, if you sounded or even resembled somebody else, you were instantly just put to the side.
Yeah.
So I have my influences, I have my inspirations, but I don't want to sound like them, but I want their inspirations to be heard through me.
Yes, I love that. And you want to make your, there's a reason why you felt called to do this too, right? Like there is, I think whenever you're a creative in any form or capacity, you have something in you that's godlike that needs to be revealed that can only be done through you. And that's why, like, no matter whether you are creative or whatever job industry you're in, like, sometimes it could feel like the market is so oversaturated. Mm-hmm. Why do I matter? Why is anyone going to pay attention to me? And it's like, this goes back to me being spiritual and into Kabbalah and whatnot. But it's like, every soul is so unique and so important that, like, if you were given this desire, the fulfillment was created before the desire. In other words, the reality was created even before you felt the desire. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't feel the desire for anything if it wasn't meant for you.
Okay.
Now, don't be specific with that. Don't be like, let's say, for example, with love, you're like, that person's my soulmate. Like, no, maybe. But it's really more like if you feel that one day you will be in love and you will be a husband, a father, right? If you feel called to that at the right time, the right person, that will happen for you.
Wow. I forgot that we discussed that the last time.
Yeah. We did. Because what happened was on our, just a little preview of our, I like to do a pregame with all my guests. Mm-hmm. And so we met for coffee and we were meeting at Barnes & Noble's and there was like a little mom and her baby who walked by. Mm-hmm. And then you were like, heard the baby crying. You're like, oh, baby.
I don't know what it is, but every time I see a baby, now I'm sitting there going, I don't have any kids right now.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to feel that call to have children, but yeah. I've been very careful over the years
as you should be.
Because I don't want to create a child and do wrong by them.
For sure.
Because, you know, right now I know I'm not equipped to be a father.
Yeah.
You know, I'm too selfish trying to work for myself.
Yeah. You're creating the foundation for it.
Yeah.
It's not that it can't and won't happen for you. It will. Mm-hmm. It's just you are doing the best thing for your future family right now.
Right. And
yeah,
I hope they appreciate that one day.
They will. They absolutely will. And also, like, I think it is so refreshing to hear a man be so open about that desire too. Mm-hmm. You know, I think a lot of people are just like living their bachelor life or their bachelorette life and like, I don't want this. And I think there's something so beautiful about just being like, yeah, I have this desire for it, but I also am responsible enough and know that like how I envision it isn't what I'm currently ready for right now.
Right.
But it's still totally beautiful to be like, yeah, I love kids and I would love to have a family one day. And I see that for myself.
And like right now I have 5 nieces and nephews that if, you know, I want to hang out with some kids, I will go to my brother's house. Totally. Shout out to y'all. Love y'all. but if I want to hang out with, you know, my nieces and nephews, I'll just go over to his house, kick it with them for the day. And it's a great time. Like,
yeah,
I think we just recently celebrated my youngest niece's birthday and, you know, had a birthday party, yay, went to dinner. It was a beautiful thing.
Yeah. And I feel the same way. Like I have 6. I just had the 6th nephew was just born.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I have nephews and nieces and then cousins and my friends. A lot of my friends have kids too. So like I get to be my fun auntie stage.
Yeah, I'm the fun uncle.
And it's so great because it's like I do love kids. I don't feel like I'm ready for that right now.
Right.
But it's so great that there's a way for me to be maternal and nurturing without taking on the responsibility just yet, you know?
There's a way to experience it without having to fully dive in and commit to it.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. And like, I also just want to take a little moment and pause and say for anyone in my audience who has been following along, I apologize from the depths of my soul for the audio. Oh, for the past few episodes. If you've been watching, especially if you've been watching chronologically, it has been a journey.
Always is.
It has been a journey. I have lost videos. I have lost half of videos. I have lost audio. And like, I'm so committed to the process of getting to 100 episodes that unless for whatever reason the episode is completely ruined, I'm like, if it was a great conversation.
Get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai Chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Even if the audio was a little echoey and didn't turn out like I wanted it to because my mic's backed out, so I had to use my iPhone backup. To me, it's like, I don't know. There's something about that first time, that organic conversation. I just want to put it out into the world.
So like there is something to be said about substance over
quality?
Like, no, it's not quite the right word, but like substance over image. If that makes sense. Like I remember watching those videos and I have an ear for audio.
Right.
So like I picked up on it, but it was still fine because I was invested in the conversation.
Right. Because I've had the same experience as a consumer as well, where it's like, obviously there's been a few podcasts, like especially up and coming new ones who maybe don't have the budget or are still trying to figure it out, but they're doing the thing.
Right.
And so at first, some of them I listened to just for support. Do you know what I mean? You listen to the first episode, you're like, yeah, I'll listen to your episode.
Right.
And at first I'm like, okay, this is like your first reaction viscerally is like, you know, like, I don't know if I want to continue listening, but for most people, they're cleaning their house, they're doing whatever. And then you kind of just keeps playing. And then, like you said, something about the conversation draws you in. And the next thing you know, it's not the biggest deal in the world.
I mean, it's the same with podcasts as with music. Your core audience will come from passive listeners who transition to active listeners.
Yeah.
And that's a process. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Right. It's part of the process. Unfortunately, so fortunately, I found these little lapel mics, which have done a phenomenal job in the interim. I'm going to give these a few more chances to see if these beautiful, they're beautiful mics, to see if they'll work.
The ADD is like kicking in right now. I love the colors.
It's so calming and relaxing. The quality is gorgeous. Yeah, I just can't figure out why it keeps not working. Like it will just every minute just pop out. I did actually go on to Rosie's podcast that I
saw you post on Instagram that you were doing it, but we haven't discussed it,
so it's not live yet, but I was a guest. Okay. And it was so much fun being in the other shoes. And the audio that you taught her how to do, so cool. So I'm like thinking to myself, as pretty as these are, in the end of the day I need functionality over beauty. But we're here for a reason, and we're here to talk about you and who you are and how you got into the music industry. Starting from childhood, were you always into music? Was it always something that drew you in?
So, yes. When I was a child, my mother exposed me to all different types of music. Believe it or not, hip-hop was one of the last ones that I experienced.
Really?
She could not stand hip hop when I was a kid.
Okay.
So I was listening to from everything ranging from Broadway musicals to jazz to the Rat Pack, Frank Sinatra, and Sting and the Police and Jimi Hendrix, you know, Bob Marley, like everything. So I've always had this innate love for music. One of my first memories is when I'm about 4 years old or 3 years old, my grandfather had recorded on VHS, a special on PBS that Michael Crawford did.
Mm.
Michael Crawford, if you don't know, is the original Phantom of the Opera. So he had a concert where he sang a lot of Andrew Lloyd Webber songs.
Yeah.
And I think I still have that tape at home. It just captured me. And you remember those little plastic picnic tables we had as kids and the little toy mics?
Yeah.
So I would get up on that picnic table and just sing those songs.
That's so cute.
So I've always had entertainment, music, like in my blood. You know, my great grandfather used to sing on the radio here in St. Louis back in the 1920s.
That's so cool.
My uncle got a full ride scholarship to Mizzou for music. So like music is literally in my blood.
I love that.
So from childhood, I didn't really fully embrace the music. I went more toward the theater.
The
performance aspect of it.
Yeah.
So I did a lot of shows in high school, like musicals, comedies, tragedies. And that captured some sort of creativity in my brain that I just wanted to pursue it.
Yeah.
And I pursued it all the way to Chicago, which didn't quite work out. being 21 years old and moving to a city all by yourself, not the best move. Like,
yeah.
I went through a lot of mental struggles.
Yeah.
And I also, I got hit by a car while I was walking across the street, and that was like the final straw.
Right.
I said, you know what? Let me just come back to St. Louis and I'll figure it out from there.
Curious question for you.
Curious answer.
Do you think, looking back now, like, was it just the fact that you were 21 going to Chicago, or could there have been a better way that maybe it would have worked out for you? Looking back now that you have like life experience under your belt.
Looking back, I wouldn't do anything different.
I love that.
For the simple fact that, yeah, there are probably ways that I could have done it to where I would have set myself up better for success. But I also feel like we are greater than the sum of our experiences, but our experiences are necessary to create who we are today.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I learned a lot living by myself in a bigger city like Chicago, you know, far away from everything and everyone that I knew.
There's something so powerful about being able to recreate yourself where mm-hmm. no one knows you or where you came from.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was fantastic. My issue was I spent all of my money at the bars just because, mm-hmm. one, at first it was just fun.
Right.
Then it was like, oh, I'm very alone. Mm-hmm. Let me just go to this bar where there are other people and, you know, drown my sorrows.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, it everything in life has balance. So there are equally good, equally bad parts about it. I still treasure the experience as a whole.
Yeah. That's so beautiful. That's really cool. So you were 21.
I was 21.
And you were there for how long? About a year?
About a year, okay. Roughly. And I came back to St. Louis and I got a job working for a subcontractor for General Motors, which that was definitely an experience because I still work for General Motors as a subcontractor in a subcontractor's company. And 6 days a week, sometimes 12-hour days, it's taught me resilience. It's taught me stamina. It's taught me how to just keep pushing through.
Yeah.
But it also introduced me to M. West at that job because this was back in 2019, 2018. He had just started Underground Society and released an EP called The Definition. And the whole time I worked there, he and I were just always talking music because I've always been a fan of hip hop since 2000 when Country Grammar came out.
Yep.
And so we would always just discuss everything music from, you know, who had the better verse on Renegade, Eminem or Jay-Z, to, you know, who's the better trap artist like Gucci Mane or Young Jeezy. Well, back then, Young Jeezy, now just Jeezy. And so when he started his music, mm-hmm. doing his music thing, I was supportive. I was just supportive at the time. It wasn't until 2020 that I actually say, you know what? Something clicked in my brain. Let me actually pursue this.
Yeah.
So it's funny. The very first thing I recorded, I wrote down on a notepad in my car and off a YouTube beat. I had two phones at the time. I hooked the old phone up to the current phone's hotspot and played the beat in the car speakers, recorded a voice memo on the current phone with the notepad sitting right there. And I just recorded this 16-bar verse, sent it to Wes, and I said, hey, this is my first true attempt to record.
Yeah.
What do you think? And I'll never forget his words. He said, be more confident, keep going. That's all he said. So I did that. I kept going, kept writing, kept sending him stuff. And finally, he looked at me one day and said, I need to get you in the studio.
Wow.
So he invited me to his home where he keeps his studio. I never left. Like a whole summer in 2020, I just kept going back.
Wow.
And, you know, finally I got my chops, you know, my recording chops. And I think it was 2022. Yeah. January 2022. I went to Flint, Michigan to learn how to produce from the homie Stormy Weather, who I met through TikTok.
Yeah.
And she sat me down in her studio, just laid down a foundation of knowledge, just like M. West laid down a foundation of knowledge on how to record. And I took that back home, bought my own studio set up, and just kept building on it. So now I'm here today with my own studio, my own beats, making a little money off the beats that I'm making. Actually, I was nominated for Producer of the Year here in St. Louis.
I saw that. I voted for you.
I appreciate that. I didn't make it, but hey, it was an honor being nominated.
I had the same thing with Entrepreneur of Impact.
I voted for you, too.
I appreciate it.
But not only was I nominated for Producer of the Year here in St. Louis, but I was nominated down in Birmingham, Alabama.
Hey.
So going from not recording anything at all to recording in a car, so now I'm being nominated for awards in multiple states. Like it's definitely been a hell of a journey so far.
And you're still going.
Still going.
Yeah.
My first single of 2025 is dropping on Easter, April 20th.
Awesome. Awesome. I feel I have to figure out the dates, but it would be very cool if this is after then.
Mm-hmm.
We'll definitely include the links for it. We'll include all your links anyway so people could find you.
Beautiful.
But I think specifically for that song, that would be really fun to like share.
I would definitely appreciate that. And I'm definitely going to share the ever-loving hell out of this podcast.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're very welcome.
But I was going to say, I love everything about this story. But like, I think especially the part where you did it in your car and you were so creative. I'm like, I feel this in my soul as like a creator and someone who's like starting from the beginning is that like, it's just such proof that like when you have something that needs to be released to the world, you don't need the fancy, expensive equipment.
No.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
And it's kind of funny when you said I had something that needed to be released. Like it, the situation that led up to that car recording was actually like that to a T.
Wow.
There was a situation involving my ex-girlfriend and her kids that got me very upset.
Yeah.
Very to the point where I was like, I really want to do something stupid. Let me not do that.
Yeah.
So I was driving back home, and up until that point,
get everything you need to bring home the holidays on Black Friday at Menards. Doors open 6 a.m. A Nerf Blaster Dog Toy Blast Tennis Ball 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Doors open 6 a.m. on Black Friday, good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Went from like grade school, high school till 2020. I'd always wanted to write my own verses, my own songs, but every time I tried, it was just not good. It wasn't good at all. I just threw it out. So while I was driving home from that situation, I was listening to this song called Low Key by Hobson. And there's one part of the song that I just heard it and something clicked. Where it's like, who was the plug for the drugs? Tell me where you get the pills from. I heard you came from the real slum. What the fuck you gonna do when the deal's done? The day that you fizzle out will come. That ain't a bag you made off a talent. That is a label allowance. And we go see in the end if you really can pay off the balance. And I was like, wait a second. Rewind that.
Snap. So
I listened to this 8-bar sequence like for an hour over and over again because something was speaking to me about it.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, I finally get it. Get it. So I didn't even go inside. I just pulled into my driveway, put my car in park. I pulled up a beat and I started writing everything that I was feeling.
Yeah.
That song will never come out. I recorded it and it will never see the light of day just because it's not that great. It was my first attempt. It's not going to be good. Two, it was so raw and emotional that I'm like, you know what? I just need to. Yeah, I need to keep that one for myself.
Yeah.
But it ultimately was what started this journey for me.
It opened something. It clicked.
Yeah. And it's all because I needed to release something that I was feeling.
And that is when you create something powerful.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you're authentically you, that's what people are craving, you know, because even if like there's the copycat artists, right?
Yeah. There's a lot of those here.
And that's. To an extent, I think that could be fine.
Yeah.
Because if you're paying respects or there's a certain style that you like, as long as there's something authentically you coming through, I think that's okay.
And the authentically you is what creates something unique.
Right.
Like in my mind, there's a difference between being a copycat artist, which we have a lot of here in St. Louis. Pardon me. But there's... The diamonds in the rough are the ones that let their authentic selves come through because you can't help but be unique when you let your authentic self come through. So instead of trying to put on an image or, you know, try to be somebody else, just be yourself.
Absolutely.
Just be yourself and your music is going to get way better. I promise you. It doesn't matter what style you do. It doesn't matter where you take inspiration from. Be yourself.
Yeah.
That's what's going to speak to people.
You're literally like just brimming with confidence right now. I love watching you talk about like what you're passionate about. It's so fun. And I think what was so interesting was, so like when Rosie was telling me about you, she was like, oh, I have this friend. He's a rapper. And I was like, cool. Okay. Meanwhile, full disclosure, I appreciate rap.
Yeah.
But that's not usually what's on my playlist, right?
And that's perfectly fine.
It's like for me, I'm more of like, top 20s pop music, right? I love Israeli style music, which is has a lot in like there's a lot of Middle Eastern and like Latin music roots to it. I don't speak Spanish, but I love Latin music. There's just something that because I love to dance that it just makes me like my soul. I don't know what I'm listening to, but my soul just vibes.
Well, there's something my mother told me when I was real young. Yeah. Music is the one universal language of the world. It doesn't matter what language you speak. If you can hear something from Latin America or from Israel or from Africa or from Russia,
totally.
You know, if it speaks to you, it speaks to you. And it probably will speak to you if you listen.
Yeah. And what's funny is there's been other countries from all over of music that just, I don't know, somehow find its way into my playlist or my TikTok. I discover a lot of music as well because I'll hear people use it as their background and they'll do that one lyric and I'll be like, okay. And the next thing you know, that's how my playlist like turns out. Cause like there was that one line. So people are like, oh, what artists do you like? I'm like, I don't really know if there's artists per se, but there's certain songs. And sometimes it's literally just for one lyric and I will play it on repeat. That's my ADD, I think, coming out.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But going back to your music thing. So now there's stereotypes in all kinds of music that you just assume that artists are this style of music that they are, right? To a certain extent, that's true because obviously there was something about that genre that spoke to your soul that that's why you want to express yourself to the world through this genre, right? But rappers to me seem like a little like thug, seem a little hard, seem a little scary, right? So for me, and I feel like ironically, like the day I have all kinds of outfits that I wear, but like this one, I feel like I like so proper. So it's like opposite of what you think we listen to rap. But you're so not that. I mean, I'm sure there's that's part of you, but like you're so down to earth and so sweet. But then like the minute you started rapping, I'm like, I see it. Like you embody it. So you have both in you.
So I mean it
I'm stereotyping, I know.
Well, yeah, I mean that you know, it's slightly problematic, but that's all right. No,
I'm correct me. No, I'm learning.
No, see, so I mean here. Like the idea of rappers have this thuggish appearance or like gangster appearance. Like what's appealing about rap and hip hop as a genre is it speaks on struggle.
Okay.
Like it comes from a place of struggle. That's why like in New York back in the 70s when it first was born as a genre from blues and jazz.
Is that where it stems from?
So it stems from blues, jazz, and rock and roll.
Okay.
And so St. Louis played a part of it because we were the blues and you know rock like birthplace capital of the world.
Yeah.
But New York was where really like where hip hop really birthed as a genre. And it birthed in lower income areas, a lot of minority communities, because they were just speaking on their daily struggles in life. And so why hip hop and rap is appealing to everybody is because everybody struggles in some way.
100%.
You know, I haven't led that street life, that gangbanger life. I'm not a thug. I don't ever like claim that I am, but I do speak on what I have seen and what I've been through. And some people like to take that to mean, oh, I'm trying to put on an image of like, oh, I'm a gangster. I'm, you know, you know, thug life type. No, that's not me. It will never be me, but I have struggled. I have done things that I'm not necessarily proud of, but I am open in my music.
Right.
So being down to earth just means that I'm able to be at peace with the struggles in life.
Wow, that's beautiful.
But
that's beautiful. Wait, like, can we just like repeat that sentence for a moment? Because that's so profound.
Yeah.
You said being down to earth means that you're at peace with your struggles.
Yes.
It's not that you haven't been through struggles, but you found peace within yourself and within life. That's beautiful.
A lot of that peace I found through the music. Like every artist will tell you that being a creator, I'm sure you find creating this therapeutic.
I do. I love it.
Like the act of creation is therapy.
Yeah, it's and I do you ever feel like in awe sometimes of what comes out of you when you're being creative?
Oh yeah, there's this song on my previous EP that I released with my homie Lil C. Shout out to you, Lil C. Zone 6 for Life, Underground Society. So there's this song on the Ilmo EP that I listened to the hook that I recorded, and I try to recreate that, like, you know, trying to perform it. Like, if I was to go on stage and perform that song, and I cannot recreate what I did with my voice on that hook because I was feeling some type of way when I wrote that, recorded it, that it just came out of me like that, and I can't recreate it on command.
Yep.
So it's definitely awe-inspiring when you sit back and go, geez, I did that. Now, how do I do that again?
That's such an interesting problem to have, you know, because I think depending on what it is, because it's one thing to be able to create a moment, but how do you recreate that moment, that feeling, especially if it comes from a place of darkness and sadness, and then you find peace within it, and then how do you tap into that same pain again?
So
do you actually want to?
So on stage, I do like to recreate the mentality I was in when I recorded something. And I actually use a technique that I used when I was doing my acting and theatrical performances, which is a lot of method acting. But there's this technique that I learned called the Rasa boxes when I was doing a thespian conference in high school. I know, I'm a nerd.
I love it.
But the idea is simple. Whenever you're feeling an emotion, your body has a physical reaction. So if you are to, like, if you want to recreate an emotion, you just make your body do what it was doing when it was feeling that emotion. So like, it, for example, anger. Anger is one of the most easy emotions to recreate. You know, when you're like really angry, almost close to being in a rage, like, what does your body go through? Your muscles tense, you start breathing heavy, your heart rate goes up, your blood pressure goes up to the point where you start seeing red. Well, if you do that and almost go into like this meditative process of like, I'm recreating this emotion by making my body do this, that emotion comes out. So whenever I'm on stage performing, I just use that to an extent to get myself in a mindset of, I'm Wayne B, I'm student of the game, I'm about to go on stage and kill this.
That's really cool.
And there's no greater adrenaline rush than being on stage performing your own music, the product of your own brain, and seeing people loving it.
Yeah.
It's one of the greatest adrenaline rushes I've ever experienced.
Yeah. There's also just something about performing in general, whether it's public speaking or singing, dancing, whenever there's like a bunch of people watching you do something that you love.
Oh, yeah.
And you're passionate about and you kill it. Like, you know, you killed it. And then they receive that energy and they're so responsive in a positive way. You're right. There's nothing like it.
There's a definite symbiotic relationship being on stage with the audience.
Yeah.
You have to provide that initial surge of energy.
Yes.
For the audience to feed off of, but the audience will reciprocate it.
Yes, they will.
And when they reciprocate it, you feed off that energy and it just keeps, it's an exchange back and forth.
Yes.
And one piece of advice that I would give every artist is the mentality you need to have when you're hitting the stage is you need to leave it all on the stage. Whenever I get off stage, I'm literally exhausted to the point where it's like, I'm shaking. I need to sit down for a minute.
Yeah.
Nobody talk to me. Yeah. I need to kind of come down because I literally left the entirety of my presence, my energy on that stage.
Yes.
And I have to kind of rejuvenate that real quick before I can interact with people socially.
Gotta recharge. I totally relate to you. Yeah. That's such a cool feeling. Like, I'm trying to think back to the last time I had that experience. For me, it was public speaking. And I'm better. But especially when I was younger, I had so much anxiety and I used to be so shy. But I loved public speaking, which I know sounds like counterintuitive, because I think there was a part of me that even though I had this shyness that I needed to get over with immersion therapy, just like I constantly doing. What's the trick? If you're scared of something, the only way to get over it is through it.
Yeah.
You just got to keep putting yourself in these situations and then eventually the fear will go away. It's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's so cool. Like, I remember getting up to speak. And like, you're right. In the beginning, they're there. Mm-hmm. But your energy, you have to really expand and amplify like whatever it is you want them to feel. Mm-hmm. And then there was always this moment where I'd be dramatic, or maybe I'd like pound on the podium, or would do something and I would see them shift where I shift, right?
Right.
That feeling, you're like, they're mine. And like that moment of being in the limelight, maybe it's not for everyone, but if you know, you know. And once you experience that, oh God, it's glorious.
Oh yeah. And like, don't get me wrong. Like I've never been afraid to be on stage. I've never been shy on stage. In public, it's different. I like to kind of sit off in the corner and just watch. But when I'm on stage, I've never been afraid of being on stage, but I always get extremely nervous the moment right before I walk up those stairs. But as soon as I grab the mic, that's all I'm focused on. Yes. Everything else fades away and I'm just like, cool, I'm here now. Let's go.
Yes. And you know what? My dad said something to me that really helped me through any of those moments of like anxiety or being nervous. He said, it's good to be nervous because it means you care.
Yeah, 100%. And it also keeps you on your toes.
Oh, yeah.
It keeps you focused.
Yeah. And I think, yes, this was actually something I listened to in one of the episodes of one of my favorite podcasts, which is School of Greatness by Lewis Howes.
Okay.
And he talked about—
Enjoy that free promo.
I literally talk about him all the time because I think he's a phenomenal host.
Yeah.
And I aspire to have his interview style.
Okay.
And he's so humble and I adore him. Anywho, he talked about in one episode about how they did this study where they interviewed like Olympic athletes.
Okay.
Asking them right before they're performing and like, you know, competing, how they were feeling adrenaline-wise, anxiety, being nervous. And they all said that they just kind of flipped their switch because it's the same emotions. And if you study the body, it's the same thing going on. If you study the brain, it's the same like neurons lighting up in your brain. But it's whether you are anxious or excited, it comes from the same energy space. So they just flip the switch. Instead of saying, oh, I'm nervous, they'll be like, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
It's the same energy.
Yeah.
And then if you put that focus in that way, you are giving, it's like when you focus on opportunities, what do you get? Opportunities. If you focus on everything's failing, what do you get?
You get failure.
You get failure, right? I thought that was so profound.
No, that's definitely a very interesting way to look at it. I've never thought to look at it that way before, but I don't know. I definitely understand where you're coming from too, where it's like, nervousness and excitement feel the exact same. It's all in how you use it. It's all about the balance.
And confidence a little bit as well.
Definitely confidence.
You know what I mean? Because like with podcasting, I don't really get that nervous anymore. But I used to get really, really nervous. I used to sweat through my clothes.
Right.
I couldn't feel my tongue because it would be like paper after the interview because I would be so nervous.
Okay.
To the point where sometimes even when I was speaking, and it's funny because no one picked it up that I know of. It was actually some of the episodes that I thought I was most nervous. People would be like, oh, you are so confident. I was like, I'm so glad that's how I came across because that is not what was going on inside.
It's all in how you utilize it. It can be like, it can be debilitating or it can be empowering.
Yeah.
How do you choose to utilize it?
Oh, I have a great question for you.
I may or may not have a great answer. Hold on.
Okay. So obviously there's two parts to music for you, right? Mm-hmm. There's the personal part about you wanting to release something and create something that means something to you and you want to share that with the world. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of more of a personal thing because there's the personal moments of you creating it in your own space. And then even in the studio, yeah, you have your producers and the people in the room, you know, but it's still a small space versus a more public space where you're performing for a broader audience, right?
Okay.
Oh, goodness. Where was I going with this?
I don't know, but I would love to.
I know, right?
I can't wait to get there.
My ADD is just like, wow.
It's all good.
Can I just preface and say I work as a barista.
Okay.
In the drink that I had today, I took the drink that one of our customers did because I thought it was wild. So I was like, let me try it. He got six shots of espresso. over ice with like a little bit of half and half. And I was like, fun. I want to try that.
What's going on in that man's life? Hold on. Are you, sir, are you okay?
I know. And I was like, I'm a barista. I can handle it. And I'm wired out right now. So I feel that in general, whatever you're trying to put out into the ether, mm-hmm. if you come from a space of wanting to give mm-hmm. and add value, that is when you're going to make the most impact, right?
Okay.
But at the same time with music, you're also wanting to release and share something. So when you're creating music personally, mm-hmm. but then also separately when you're performing, are you thinking of coming from a place of, I have something that I want to share with the world? And like, I hope whoever my people will find me, or are you like, I want to make an impact. So help me give, help me make this. I hope this song finds someone and it just, they get it and it connects and they feel less alone. Like, does that make sense what I'm asking?
Yeah, no, it does. Okay. And so what, when I make music, my only goal is to make music that I would enjoy listening to, that I need to hear. That you know, that touches me, because I know that if I like what I do, somebody else is going to like it, because I feel like I've got good taste. But there's also a certain level of motivation that I get, actually an extreme amount of motivation I get from knowing that my music has an impact in people's lives. Every time I get a message or a phone call or whatever from anybody saying, hey, dude, I listened to such and such a song and it either helped me get through such and such of this, or it pumped me up for this, or, you know, it did something for me for some reason.
Yeah.
That is probably the most powerful thing that I've experienced. Just the simple fact that I can touch someone's life, improve someone's day, no matter how greatly or minimally, that's very powerful.
Yeah.
And it's something that I hold a tremendous amount of respect for.
I will say that your style of writing, now, albeit I will, like I said, I'm not a huge rapper listener audience, but like, even so, when I was listening to yours, something that really stood out to me about your sound is that like, your lyrics are very poetic and it's really deep.
So a lot of that inspiration came from
storytelling. Yeah.
Came from my mom showing me Sting and how he writes his lyrics. There's something about that poetry that just really spoke to me. So it's like, cool, I can take that and I can utilize it in my own way. And when you realize that there are no rules to the English language, all the rules of the English language are just arbitrary constructs.
Right.
So if you want to create something lyrically, you just have to be creative enough to bend the English language to suit your needs. And that's not even a new concept. Shakespeare did it. You know what I mean? Shakespeare invented so many new words and colloquialisms and just turns a phrase just to fit what he was trying to express. Before he did it, before he put a certain word or a certain phrase in his plays, they never existed.
Yeah.
But because he did it in such a way to where it conveyed a thought or an emotion, people immediately understood that, oh, that's what this means. If Shakespeare can do it, if Sting can do it, why can't I?
Yeah. That's really cool. And I picked up on it, and I am by no means an expert. So if I picked up on it, I can only imagine how like someone who truly appreciates music and understands your like the genre of hip hop would like love that.
Yeah. And that's something I pride myself on, is having a certain level of lyricism, especially when it comes to my rhyme schemes.
That's the word. I struggle best there a little bit.
That's okay. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a certain standard that I like to hold myself to. But also there are times where it's like, it's okay to let myself express without holding myself to a standard.
Yeah.
To just let something come out without trying to make it fit something that I want it to do.
Yeah, totally. I love that. That's so great.
Like there's no like static rules that you have to follow to create. Just create. And if you want to do it a certain way, do it that way. But if something is like compelling you to do it a different way, listen to your gut, listen to your instincts.
Yeah. And I think that fear really stops a lot of people.
Yeah.
From, you know, and what was the line again that you were told was be more confident, keep going.
Yeah. Be more confident, keep going.
That is like, I think such a good line for anyone and everyone, no matter what you're doing, because Alex Hormozi, are you familiar with him?
No, I am not.
Ooh, you should look him up. He's an entrepreneur.
Okay.
And he gives a lot of great business advice.
Okay.
But it's also like he's really into fitness and personal development. I just feel like it just wonderful, wonderful guy. Anywho, he says that, and I'm sure he did some original thing, but confidence comes from competence.
Mm-hmm.
So you're never going to feel confident till afterwards.
Right.
And I think so many of us are waiting to feel confident. And you're not going to get there until you've gone through the motions, right?
Like, there is no such thing as passive success.
Mm.
Like, the success that you see people enjoying... Well, hold on. I screwed up that phrase. There's no such thing as an overnight success. Okay. An overnight success is 20 years in the making.
Totally.
And also, there is no such thing as passive success. You can't just sit back and let success come to you. You need to go and get it.
Correct. Because even let's say for the sake of being on the other side of things,
mm-hmm.
devil's advocate, if you will, okay. Is people believe in law of attraction and alignment mm-hmm. and things will flow to me, right? To an extent, yes.
Yeah.
I do believe that if you're in a good state and you're positive and you're a hard worker, like sometimes opportunities will come to you and to your door, the right people, the right time, all these things, right? Serendipity. But you still need to work hard.
Yeah.
You still need to show up and put in actionable steps and effort
mm-hmm.
to improve and grow. And it's like, what's this phrase? I saw this recently. I wish I was better sometimes remembering who says what so I can give him credit. But there's this quote that I love, which is, the harder I work, the luckier I get.
Yeah. No, 100%. I do not believe in luck.
Mm.
Like, I believe luck is something that you create.
Mm.
If you're going around just saying, oh, if I didn't have bad luck, I wouldn't have any at all. That's a horrible mindset to be in.
Yeah.
Because you're limiting yourself to saying, oh, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm always going to be at. You are the only architect of your change.
What a beautiful sentence. Yes.
You know, if you want to change where you are, you need to take the steps to get there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care what step you take. That first step is the most important. Day one is better than one day. So just go and do it.
Yeah. Totally. A recent one, and this isn't like in the creative thing at all, but I recently got into running
mm-hmm.
about like 2 weeks ago. First day, I wasn't sore yet from training. So the first day I was like angry about something. I'm like, you know what? I'm going for a run. And so I was like, I just need to get this, you know, like I used to run 10 years ago and I had an injury. So let me just try it again. And I went for a run. And I felt great. I'm like, yeah. And then day two came and I'm like, ugh.
You're sitting there going,
Literally. Oh my god. And even like help. Running, I couldn't even do the same like pace or length that I did the day before.
Right.
Because I was so freaking sore that like it was disgusting. Day three, worse. Even worse. The first week was so painful.
Yeah.
And then something happened on day five where I was a little less sore and I was a little bit faster. And then I learned that just because I'm out of breath doesn't mean I need to stop running. What a concept.
I mean, yeah, like that is the perfect like imagery for life.
Yes.
Because you're not going to get anything without adversity, whether it's adversity with others or your environment or with yourself. Yeah. So, you know, the only time you fail is when you give up. And if you don't give up, you haven't failed.
Right. Alex Ramosi, I think, said this in one of his posts I saw on TikTok. There was like this, I'm sure you've seen it, but there's this like illustration of these two miners underneath the ground. Mm-hmm. One's on top of the other. They don't see each other, obviously. And they're both so close to like the end goal. And then one of them is like this close away from like all the gold. And then he just like walks away.
Right.
And the other one's like really close and about to get it. And it's like being an entrepreneur, being an artist, anytime you're trying to create something for yourself, mm-hmm. whatever capacity you're going after your goals, there's either success, like you will be successful eventually.
Right.
The only way to fail is to give up.
Right.
That's it.
And it's okay to forgive yourself and be kind to yourself when you have days where you're like, I need to not do this for right now.
To slow down, to take a little breather is fine. To you quit know, completely.
No.
It's a totally different story.
100%. Like something that I do that I think is just my body telling me, okay, you need to sit down for a minute, is in the wintertime, I go through this, I like to call it a creative hibernation. Like anytime I try to create when it's cold out, I just can't do it. And if I force myself to do it, what comes out is not my best work. Oh. So I finally listened to myself and my body this year because it manifested itself in such an obvious sign that it is time to sit down that I'm like, okay, I need to listen. So back in December, late November, early December, I caught the flu, influenza A. Everyone, you know, it's been going around.
Yeah, you got it early.
Yeah, I got it real early. Lucky me, right?
It was awful. I had it a few weeks later and it's disgusting.
But I'm glad I got it out of the way early. But as a result of that, I learned that whenever you have some sort of viral infection like that, you can develop something called Bell's palsy. Which Bell's palsy mimics the symptoms of a stroke, where half of my face just stopped working.
I remember you telling me this.
And one, scared the ever-loving hell out of me.
Yeah.
But to show you how I think and how I do things, I went through a whole day of work experiencing this, thinking, I feel bad. If this doesn't improve, then I'm going to go to the hospital when I get off work. It was, and so I got off work. My face still wasn't working right. And I drove myself to the ER, walked in and said, hey guys, I think I'm having a stroke. And the guy went, what? What's going on? I said, do you not see this? Look at my face. My face ain't working, dude. And he said, okay, name social, go sit down. Soon as I sat down, they said, nope, get back up, come back here. And they got me in right away.
That's impressive.
Well, I think, you know, in an ER, they hear stroke. They go, okay, let's get him back here.
Yeah, it's like, it's not like there's a knife in your throat or something.
Right. You know, that's not something you can really play around with. So, you know, they did all the tests. They said, no, you're not having a stroke. What you've got is Bell's palsy. Here's some medicine. You'll be all right in a few weeks. But it was literally like 3 weeks of my face not working.
That's so scary.
And initially, yeah, I was terrified. But I was telling, or I was talking about it to the woman who does my promo. Shout out to you, Megan, Black Widow, Bet on Black. And she just said, look, dude, you need to sit the hell down and rest. I said, yeah, you're right. My body's been trying to tell me for years during the winter that I need to sit down. Now it just slapped me in the face with it, literally.
Yeah.
So, you know, I sat down for the winter. I finally just came back out of it when it started warming up, and now I'm creating again. You know, dropping my first single of 2025 and I wanted to say April Fool's. That's not April Fool's. It's April 20th.
April Fool's to you. Uh-huh. It's not April 1st. It's going to be April 20th. That's so fun.
But, you know, I have that single ready to go, but I've got like two other things that I'm writing and two other things I'm producing. Like I'm just immediately back in that creative space.
Totally. Okay. I'm going to ask a question. Mm-hmm. And I learned something when I was in middle school that stuck with me for the rest of my life, which is back to the age-old thing, there's no dumb questions.
Right.
And if you have a question, there's probably someone else out there who has the same question, and maybe they feel like too embarrassed to ask it. So,
okay.
I enjoy music. I love music. I'm not a connoisseur at all. And you've thrown out this word two times so far in an episode, and I want to like take a moment and ask what it means. What is an EP?
So here's how I understand it.
Okay.
There, when you release a single, it's just one song.
Okay.
An EP, how M. West explained it to me, is a collection of 5 to 7 songs.
Okay.
It's not quite the length of a full album.
Okay.
But it's not just a single. It's an EP.
Okay.
And then an LP is anything from, I might get this wrong, 7 to 15 songs.
It's a lot.
Yeah, but that's just a regular album.
So an LP is an album.
Yeah, an LP is what is typically referred to as an album. And then anything between 15 and 30 songs is known as a double album.
A double album.
Okay. Which Tupac put a lot of those out.
And like Taylor Swift.
And Taylor Swift, yes. Shout out to the Swifties.
Actually,
I see you. You need to check me out too.
I'm actually not a Swiftie.
Oh, you're not a Swiftie? Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've got listeners who are. I see you, Swifties. Yeah, I'm looking at you. What are you doing?
I probably do. I said, I don't know if I said this off or on camera, but it's like there's not really artists who I'm particularly obsessed with. There might be songs I'm obsessed with them, but I don't really think there's any artists who I'm like, that's not like, oh, you're my favorite. Everything you do is like,
right.
There'll be like a song or a lyric that speaks to me, but very rarely is there someone who everything they do, I'm like, chef's kiss.
Right.
Except for Frank Sinatra.
Hey, Frank Sinatra. Oof. Love it.
Stunning.
Like, there will be times where I'll just be out and about and I'll randomly start singing, I've got you under my skin.
Okay.
It's just Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack, definitely that jazzy big band feel.
That's my jam.
Like, I love that sound. And that's a sound that I would love to recreate.
I would love to hear you modernize it by implementing it somehow into rap.
So
I like when there's like, okay, I'm totally not using the proper verbiage, but this is just how I'm going to explain the style that I like. Mm-hmm. Have you ever listened to MK2TO?
The name sounds familiar. I've probably heard it, but off the top of my head.
It's like, girl, you're classic.
Okay. Oh, yeah.
I'm terrible at remembering to sing songs like off the cusp. I'll be like, come on, bird. So I really like their style because there was like the one singer who was super soulful, which is more like that big band, swing, jazzy kind of vibes or pop, whatever you want to call it, versus then there's like the hip hop, the rap in there too. And I love how that sounds together. Like to me, I like that's my favorite. If I'm going to listen to hip hop or rap, like that's what draws me.
Yeah. And that's something that I would love to do one day.
That'd be
so cool. I just haven't felt the inspiration to actually do it yet.
Yeah. Fair. So you'll do it when it speaks
to you. Yeah. I'll do it when it speaks to me, when it's the right time.
When it's called.
Because like right now, in the past, I've been very focused on having features on my songs, like other artists do a verse on one of my songs or do a hook.
I do love when that's also really fun.
Like that, it's great. I love it just for the simple fact that I love collaborating with people.
Yeah.
Because hip hop is competitive by nature. Mm-hmm. So whenever I'm collaborating with another artist, there's that element of competition there where we both know we're competing to essentially make the other one look not as good as us. Or is, you know, perfect example for me would be like Donny Tsunami. I did a song called Going for Gold with him. And he sent me the beat. He told me like what he was doing. And I said, okay, I have great respect for him. I love the guy to death. You know, he's one of the few people that I would consider friends in this music scene. But when I wrote my verse, my intention was I want to make you look stupid on your own song. Just like when he collaborated with me on my song, I know I told him to do the same thing because that just creates a better song as a whole.
To be competitive and just bring your A game.
Yeah. Bring your A game.
Yeah.
But so in the past, I've been very feature heavy on my music. This year, I want to try to focus a little more on doing songs just by myself.
Yeah.
You know, just to truly, truly explore my own creativity where the only competition is me.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. Just constantly pushing yourself to be better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's interesting. I could, you know, it's funny. ADD and ADHD years, a trait. Are you ADD or ADHD?
ADD.
So there's a trait that we have.
I add. I don't subtract, but I add.
There's a trait that we both share.
Right, that's such a stupid joke. I hate that I said that.
So oh, no. Glad you did.
I was about to say, you better leave that in because that's funny.
I will leave it in. I'm going to say a joke now because I'm ADD and I just thought of one that I heard from a customer today.
Okay.
A guy, the same guy actually who ordered the 6-shot espresso in half and half.
The mentally unstable one, yes.
He gave a really great dad joke.
Okay.
Which was, why did the old man who couldn't see very well fall into the well?
Why?
Because he couldn't see that well.
I hate that I find that funny.
So great. I love dad jokes. I think they're the best.
Oh,
man. When I was little, I had a whole book of jokes. Okay, I'm focused. Anyways, so the thing about ADD and ADHDers.
Right. Sorry, we had to take that side street real quick. We're really back.
And then anyways. So a lot of times when we hear stories, instead of like, especially as a podcast host, I'm really trying to like focus on you and like be an active listener.
Right.
But like as an ADDer, it is my biggest struggle because sometimes when you tell me things, my first reaction is to be like, my way of showing that I'm listening is to give a story where I relate to you.
I do the same damn thing.
Because you have ADD.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, it's not me trying to take over the conversation. I promise. I am a little bit into myself, but like, it's not coming from there.
No, it's.
It's like, I get excited.
I'm trying to relate.
Relate to you. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Because like, even up to us recording, we were talking back and forth and there were a couple times where I was like, oh yeah, wait, she's still talking. Let her talk. Let her talk. Shut up, Wayne. Shut up. Let her talk.
Yeah, I heard this took me so many years and I'm still not perfect at it.
Right.
But with conversation, if someone's talking and let's say they're like a whole soliloquy that they're giving, right? You give them till the end and then you give them a breath or two.
Right.
To see if they're going to keep going. And that's how you stop interrupting people.
And that's a technique that I had to develop mostly because people are like, dude, shut up. I'm like, yes.
Right. Yeah. Feel that.
I'm just trying to be your friend, man.
Just ADD coming out. I'm sorry. I'm so excited about all this.
Sorry I bothered you with my friendship. Speaking of which, shout out to my friend Amanda. She had this cup made for me. It's one of a kind. Got my logo, my QR my QR code. Artist name, and then she included Zone 6 on there as a shout out to Lil C.
That's so great.
Lil Wayne is somebody that I look up to as an inspiration because lyrically, he's. Sorry, hold on. I'm just gathering all of this information to compile it together. So when people discuss who is the best in hip hop, who is the It's all subjective.
Of course.
It's all subjective based on what they appreciate the most in music, in hip hop especially. That being said, people always make the argument that Lil Wayne will always be one of the best lyricists of all time. I don't necessarily agree with that for this reason.
Okay.
One, lyricism is broken down into multiple parts for me. One is the rhyme scheme. What I try to do is I try to rhyme multiple syllables in every line. You know, at minimum three. Yeah. That's what I try to do. That's one level of lyricism. Then you have metaphors, and then you have double and triple entendres. those are like the holy trinity of lyricism. What Lil Wayne is really good at is metaphors as well as entendres. His rhyme scheme work could be better. That right there is what makes me say, he's not going to be the best lyricist in my mind, but he's a lyricist I look up to because he is a master at metaphors and double and triple entendres.
What's an entendre?
So an entendre is saying something that can have more than one meaning.
Oh.
So like...
what a fun word, entendre.
So one example of that is just the first one that popped in my head was G's move in silence like lasagna. Because the G in lasagna is silent. But gangsters move in silence is the other meaning of that line.
You don't know how dumb I am sometimes. It's fabulous. I crack myself up. My friend, Marissa, shout out to you. Mm-hmm. She has a whole notes, like on her notes app, she has a whole page dedicated to what she calls Nahama-isms.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Are you about to say something that makes the list?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, get your notes out. Get them out. Hold on.
So, you know, the line was...
G's move in silence like lasagna.
Like lasagna, uh-huh. Right? G's move in silence like lasagna.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't thinking the G in lasagna move silently. I'm like thinking about when you cut lasagna. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty silent. That's interesting. You know, I guess he's a genius for that, I suppose. I don't think I would.
Another example. Oh, my God.
Literally, this is like, there was a certain point, like, I have a friend who's so confident. Like, whenever she goes out, mm-hmm. she's always like, whether it's dates or going out to the bars or whatever, she's like, I will always have a good time because I will be there.
I mean,
about herself,
yeah,
you know, and I
love the confidence.
That, yeah, like as I've gotten older with my like humor, I'm just like, I just crack myself up. There's been times when people are like, "What's so funny?" Like about like the person that I'm with, and I'm like, "Nothing." I just said something that just cracked me up, and I'm just like dying.
I just had another example pop in my head. I'm sorry. It just
yeah.
So another line that really made me go, "Oh, damn!" There's a level of lyricism that I want to get better at was when Lil Wayne said on Too Good by Tech N9ne, where he said, I don't do computers, but my shooters will put a bullet in your apple. It looked bit like Mac.
That's a wow.
So, I mean, that, there's a lot to unpack there.
A lot to unpack.
Like what really makes a good lyricist for me, and Lil Wayne is a good lyricist, Eminem, Tech N9ne, like all of them. When you say something that makes me go, wait a second, I need to rewind so I can unpack even more of that.
Yeah.
I can't, like, if I can listen to what you say once and get everything, cool. It's not for me.
It's not deep enough.
Right. Like, I like lyrical complexity.
I feel that from your style, too, because, like, when I was listening to your songs, I was like, I need to, like, come back when I have more time to like process. Like mm-hmm. I can't just listen to your lyrics, at least firsthand, like before, maybe once I know the songs better. Yeah. But I was like, I felt the same way with your lyrics where I'm like, I need to unpack this. Like it was almost like, you know how like certain music, you need to be in a space where you're actually not doing anything else. You mm-hmm. need to be listening to it because it's almost like a whole experience within itself.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of like what I felt.
I mean, and that's what I'm going for. Like I
love that. You're right. That as a consumer, I never realized and was able to verbalize that I appreciate that. But now that you've said it, you're right. I do appreciate that.
I think that's an inherent trait in people with ADD too, just because we'll be able to pick up on something that we're hearing passively and go, wait a second, shut everything else up.
Yeah.
Let's listen to that again.
And again.
And give my full focus to
it. And again.
Yeah.
And again. And again. Gives me hyper focus.
Hyper focus is real.
Do you watch Peaky Blinders?
I've watched like a couple seasons of it.
But conceptually, you know, like the pack, like how the guys all walk together. Yeah. Yeah. So like I saw this meme the other day where it's like when all else fails and you call the ADD and ADHDers in to solve the creative problems.
That's perfect.
Right?
That's perfect.
That's literally it. Like walking like a boss.
Like my brother has ADHD. I've got ADD. And mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure we drive his wife nuts when we get mm-hmm. together. Just because we'll have a conversation about seemingly nothing.
Yeah.
But we're solving like world hunger in a span of like 30 minutes.
Both my brothers, I have two older brothers. Neither mm-hmm. one of them have ADD or ADHD. And like, I warn people with my podcast when I first started, like my little preview episode.
Right.
I was like, if you think you know what this podcast is going to be about, you won't and you can't because I have ADD. So just buckle up.
You can't know if I don't know.
Buckle up, Buttercup, because I have no idea where this conversation is going. Hey. I always like try to make my guests feel more comfortable. I'll meet with them, build a rapport, give them the bullet list of what I think we're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. Never happens. Never happens because I get excited about whatever flows.
Like, I knew coming in here that it's like I'm not going to hold any expectations. I know at some point I'm going to talk about music.
Well, I did try to do that right away.
Right.
Because I was like, I knew you said that was the one thing that you're like, at least let's get this in there.
Right. Let's get this in there. But beyond that, I don't know where this is going to go, but it's going to be fun.
My brother, when we did his episode, when we finished, he was like, I don't know what this episode was about, but hopefully you got something good out of it.
I mean, hey, there's going to be something in it for everybody.
Literally, because it's an ADD episode.
ADD.
But going back to relating to you.
Okay.
About how you brought in other artists and mm-hmm. the songs.
Yeah.
I feel like that's why podcast-wise, I wanted to have guests. Mm-hmm. Because I know it doesn't seem like it, but it's actually really hard for me to just talk solo if there's not someone else there to bounce off of.
I understand that. You know, that ricochet effect is really helpful.
And every guest that I've had on is so different mm-hmm. that they bring out different sides of me.
Right.
You know? It's the best. It's literally the best. I love it. And so that's also where I tell people, besides for the ADD thing, one episode may not speak to you because maybe you don't like the topic. You don't like the way that, you know, that the person, whatever, whatever.
Right.
Which I highly doubt because I've selected all my guests and they're fabulous, if I do say so myself. Side note, can I tell you my idea for my 100th episode?
I love ideas.
Okay. It's going to happen. It's not just an idea. Okay. But like I started talking about it in every episode because I'm very excited.
Okay.
Because now I'm putting out into the ether that I'm getting to 100 episodes. This is my goal.
Okay.
I would like to have a live episode for episode 100.
Okay.
And I'm going to invite all the guests who've ever been on. Ooh. Plus whoever they want to bring to, plus open to the public.
Okay.
So it's going to be this huge party,
right.
But it's going to be a live episode that we're going to record first and then networking afterwards.
Nice.
And a bunch, so far, I believe every single one of my guests have at least originated from St. Louis.
Perfect.
So it'd be so cool to get everybody in the same room.
Right.
Because St. Louis, so big, but so small.
Right. Like we're a melting pot of so many different people.
And my podcast is so many different people.
It is. Like, it's very – it gives a lot of People of New York vibes.
I love that you picked it up because that was literally part of my inspiration.
Well, and that's how Rose presented it to me when she first told me about you. She's like, yeah, Nakama, she does this, you know, People from New York kind of style podcast, but she does it her own way. I'm like, okay, let me check this out.
What was the first episode you checked out?
I cannot remember her name.
It's okay. If you give me like just I'll figure it out.
It was like this blonde chick that was like very out there. Very out there. Done like a bunch of different podcasts with other people. And then she came on yours. Oh my God. I'd have to look it up.
Was it the one where her grandfather was a Nazi and her grandmother was Jewish?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was it. Cause I was sitting there going.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You know, this was really back in the beginning stages of my podcast where okay. I was working corporate and she was the executive assistant for the CEO of the company.
Okay.
And I don't remember how we got into this conversation, but when she said that her grandfather was a Nazi and her grandmother was Jewish, I was like, hell yeah. I was like, I'm so nervous to ask her, but I did. Like,
how did that work?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
Go listen to the episode. I'm not telling you.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to give it away.
Yeah. It was wild,
like,
though, no.
Like I remember off the top of my head. Of course I do. I'm not going to give it away, though.
Fun question to ask people.
I thought you were about to say, speaking of time, we're out of time. Get out.
not yet. question for you.
Okay.
So you've done so much mm-hmm. with your music and grown as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
If in the next 10 years, no restrictions of like what could happen. This isn't about being practical or logical or rational. Just if everything could go right for you.
Okay.
According to what you're working towards, where would you like to be in 10 years?
In 10 years, no matter where I go, I'm going to still be making music. No matter what happens. In 10 years, I would like to still be here in St. Louis, but be known everywhere. And it's not on some type thing where I want to be famous. That's really not my goal. My goal is I want to be able to work for myself and support myself doing the thing that I love doing.
Amen.
And I also want to continue to touch people's lives with my creativity. So in 10 years, I'd like to be doing what I'm doing now, just on a bigger scale.
Yeah. Yeah. Because who said this? I don't remember who said this, but it was so beautiful when I heard it, where it was like, I think it was Gary Vee. It might have been Gary Vee, who said that it's not that when you become famous and all these people know about you, or it's on a bigger scale, that all of a sudden that's what makes you successful.
No.
You are successful right now. It's just the consistent effort that you're putting in to mm-hmm. show up, put content out there, and get better is going to bring more and more people to you. You know, it's like, it's not like a movie actor where it's, let's say, for example, on Instagram. That's a great way, no matter what you do, to share your work, right?
Mm-hmm.
On Instagram, if you're like some movie star and you're promoting a movie, you might wake up the next morning and have like 2,000 more followers or something crazy, or maybe even bigger than that all of a sudden overnight, right?
Right.
Versus like, for me, I wake up and every 2 days, maybe I have one or two more followers.
Same here.
Which is so exciting.
Yeah.
Because I remember when that wasn't the case.
Like, I remember, at all. I remember having 10 followers. Now I'm in triple digits. I don't have a huge following on Instagram.
Yeah.
But I appreciate every single one of them.
Totally. And don't you get such joy when there's a follower who found you from a reel?
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
Like, so in my Spotify profile, I have a link to my Instagram there.
Mm-hmm.
And it truly gets me excited whenever somebody follows me and they comment or send me a message saying, hey, heard your music. Keep going.
Yeah.
I'm just like, yeah.
Yeah.
I just touched your life with my music.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal. That's extremely powerful.
I think I have about, on my podcast, One Jew from Lou, I think I have a little over 300 right now. And especially in the beginning, first it was friends and family, me being like, go follow my account. And then after that, it was literally me physically meeting people and being like, hey, do you have Instagram?
Right.
Do you have your phone on you? Why don't we just pull out that bad boy and you can just hit subscribe? So it's like every single subscriber I like physically earned by meeting them, making connections, networking, and them liking my vibe, or maybe just me social pressuring them. But regardless,
it's just, bullying is okay in certain ways. No,
I hope so, because I'm like, listen, you may not know it, but I really feel like I can add value to your life.
Right.
So just stick along, please.
You need me in your life. You don't know it yet, but you don't
know it yet, but I'm your new BFF.
Hey.
But I don't know. It's just, it's so cool to see. It's such a fun journey to be on.
Mm-hmm.
But my favorite thing about podcasting, and this is just the prime example right here, right now, getting to do this.
Yeah.
Like, under what other circumstances would we have met?
Running into each other at a coffee shop? I don't know.
Maybe. But like, what I love about this is like most times when you meet people, mm-hmm. you don't usually get the opportunity to just dive into a meaningful conversation.
No, mostly because, you know, a lot of that social anxiety of like, why is this person talking to me? I don't know you. Go away.
Right. And so like, there's so many people who like, I really believe we all have stories and we all have value and we all have so much we can share with each mm-hmm. other. Right. And I know just on a personal level, whether even if zero people watch this episode, I gain so much yeah. just by sitting here and talking with you and learning from you, not just this conversation, but the conversation we had before we started recording and then the conversation that we had in the coffee shop. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I do the pre-games to build rapport, especially mm-hmm. if I hadn't known the people beforehand or didn't know them that well. And we talk about stuff that usually doesn't even end up on the episode.
Yeah.
And that's okay because it's not for everyone. It's about building the rapport so that this energy is what brings people in.
We can have this organic back and forth. This isn't prefabricated at all. There is no script.
People ask me that. I had a guest on where she had been a listener beforehand and she thought that there was like some sort of script. And she was like, once she was on, she realized how chaotic and organic it was.
Like, I could tell from the first time I checked out your content, I was like, cool, the only thing that's scripted is her intro and her outro. That's it. Mm-hmm. Everything else is like, cool, let it fly out the mouth.
And even my intro and outro, sometimes I forget stuff.
There are certain times where when I record, I don't freestyle. Everything's written.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, every song I record, you can ask people this who have recorded with me. There are moments where I have to step back and like go, dude, you wrote this. Quit screwing it up.
That would be really hard. I've thought about that. Like as an artist, being able to hit those notes, being able to remember certain lyrics, like mm-hmm. especially if you're doing like a whole bunch of songs for a performance, that's a lot.
And a lot of it when you're recording, especially hip hop in my particular style, it's like, ooh, I need to hit this certain pocket of the beat in this certain way, mm-hmm. you know, with this certain cadence. And whenever the tiniest little thing can throw it all off.
You have to be a nerd.
Yes.
You do.
Yes.
And I think being a nerd, like that term has had like such a bad rep. Mm-hmm. But really what being a nerd means is that you are super focused, hyper-focused on whatever area that you are passionate about.
Yeah.
And it's a science. Everything's a science. Like if you look at fitness, right? People are like, oh, such bros, right? In the gym. They're usually the biggest nerds.
Yeah.
Because like the macros and counting your calories and like understanding fitness, like everything, coffee is a science.
Yeah, when we had that discussion about coffee, I'm sitting there going, I just thought it were Colombian beans that you ground up and get poured water through.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know there was that much to it.
There's so much. And I'm literally brushing the surface.
And like when I have this, you know, conversation about music in any aspect, people will look at me and go, dude, I have no, you lost me like 10 minutes ago. But I have no idea what you're talking about.
I know even this conversation is just brushing the surface, mm-hmm. you know, but this is such a, I like that we are taking a little bit of a beginner's deep dive into, I got to do a little, I don't even have my nails done and I'm already.
Neither do I. It's fine.
But I was going to say, I did have this question that I've always wanted to ask an artist,
Okay. Which
is, okay, you create this song that you love, that's meaningful to you and you're like, got it, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe you refine it, whatever. But at the point where you finally recorded it and now you're performing it and you're performing it and you're performing it and you're performing it, do you ever get sick of your own songs?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I do. Especially with the way I record and create music. A lot of artists, they'll hear the beat, they'll write the lyrics, they'll record it, and they'll send it to somebody else to mix and master it.
Mm-hmm.
I babysit my songs the whole freaking time. From making the beat, spending hours doing that, to writing the lyrics, to recording the song, doing all the takes, the ins, the outs, the vocal stacks, you know, the panning left and right, this, that, and the other, the bleh. Then I do all the mixing, you know, the compression, the EQ, the de-essing, the this, that, and the other, every little spicy thing and fine tuning it to, you know, the point where I can hear the same hook over and over and over and over again on repeat for like an hour straight,
mm-hmm.
to the point where I'm cross-eyed.
Yeah.
And then I leave it alone and come back and mix it some more. And then I master it. And then I send it off to distribution. And then when people are hearing it, they're playing it for me. And I'm like, great. I love the fact that you love my music. I just spent the last month hearing this over and over again. Oh my goodness. But at the same time, if I take a break from listening to my music, to say a particular song for a while, and then I come back and I hear it again, that magic comes right back. Because at the end of the day, I stay true to myself and I only make music that I would enjoy listening to.
Right. That's really cool. There's so much that goes into it. It really is such an art. It's like a recipe too.
Yeah, there's definitely formulas and there's no one way to do it.
I love that. Yeah.
Like, I look at my friend Stormy Weather as a mentor, and especially production. But the way that she does things is not necessarily the way I always do things. Mm-hmm. And my homie PR down in Huntsville, Alabama, shout out to y'all. I love y'all. He does things a totally different way.
Yeah.
And I go to him for advice. I do things my own way. Do what feels right to get the sound that you want, and you're doing it right. It doesn't matter how it gets done.
Yeah. Yeah. And no matter what you do, I think this is a relatable concept for anything that you are trying to create and put out into the world, is that don't get so caught up on like the right way.
Yeah.
It's just do some way.
Yeah.
And like you will figure it out.
Yeah.
As you go along.
Like I will advocate for having a foundation of knowledge laid for you.
Mm-hmm.
Because that is a lot easier to build on than nothing. Like I'm very blessed in that I've had the guiding hands of M West, Stormy Weather, PR, laying foundations of knowledge for me that I have then built upon myself. Now, you don't have to have that, but it makes things a lot easier.
Totally. That's so cool. This is so great.
I love it.
Unfortunately, I do think we should wrap it up just because time.
Yeah.
But like, I literally love the flow of this conversation. I feel like we've just brushed the surface. And it's so funny because like, we obviously talked about little things here and there, but majority of this was so much about music, which I'm so happy about because I know that's your passion.
Right.
But I was like, when we were talking, I was like, I don't know if I know enough that I could continue on the conversation, but it just goes to show that like, you've got good energy, you're curious, you can talk about anything.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And you know, just because we focused more on one thing in this conversation doesn't mean that there can't be a part two.
For sure. For sure. But I'm also just like so glad that we got to do such a deep dive because I got to ask a lot of my questions that I didn't even realize that I had. But then as you're talking, I'm like, wait a minute, I've always wanted to know this. And I'm sure there's people who will listen who are going to like appreciate too, you know?
Oh yeah, 100%.
And also just hearing someone like nerd out about what they love is the best.
Totally I love hearing people talk about something that they're passionate about.
Mm.
Just because that is when you see people at their truest, authentic self because you can't help yourself.
Yeah.
You can't help but let that excitement come out.
Yeah, it's the best, isn't it? People transform in front of your eyes.
Oh, yeah. So, you know, like I'm a phoenix.
Rising from the ashes.
Hey. Phoenix time.
So I have this tradition.
Okay.
The whole basis of this podcast, as much as I joke about it being like ADD and like chaotic, it's based on this Hebrew quote, which is Ezeh Chacham Halomed Mikol Adam, which means one who is wise is one who learns from everyone.
Okay.
And we have learned so much from you.
Hey.
But if you can leave us with one last little nugget, whether it's a quotable quote or your favorite life lesson.
You can't love anything or anyone else until you learn to love yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And loving yourself is a skill that needs to be developed like anything else. So forgive yourself and learn to love yourself.
That is so profound. Yeah, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel like that's affected your music?
I think that it has affected my music to the point where I don't care what anyone else thinks about what I do because I love what I do.
Yeah.
And even though I have so many people showing me positive support, for every negative comment, I'll get 3 or 4 positive comments. It's just an unfortunate reality that the negative comments are the loudest. But I've learned to love myself and love what I do, so I don't care what you think.
Totally.
But I also respect your ability to have that opinion.
For sure. Something that I've been doing, I haven't gotten too many, but whenever I get any negative comments or just ones that are just like, I just give love back to them.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking about it. Like, we all have reactions to everything we see and we hear. So let's say you're scrolling and on Instagram, for example, and you see a reel that you're just like, I don't even feel the need to do a bad thumbs down or to comment. I just move on and whatever. And if it's too bad or whatever, and I really don't want to see it, I'll just like mute the person or say, I don't want to see this.
That block button's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. But like, if you think about it, like what headspace does that person need to be in to actually type out a comment? Like how hurt must they be in their own lives?
Hurt people hurt people.
And so what I've done is I've followed up those comments with love and just been like caring towards the person. And like I've actually, there was one woman who like became a follower actually after I had that interaction with
her. That's awesome.
She just needed the validation, you know, just I want to care about her. And
That's really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe that's something I'll try in the future.
Yeah.
Instead of just leaving it alone, I'll try to respond with love.
Right. In whatever way possible. And it could even just be something as simple as like, if you don't want to address whatever specific, let's say they're specific about something, you could just say, hey, I appreciate your opinion. I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Yeah. Definitely give that a try next time.
You know? And then it's like you've responded. And algorithmically, it looks good that you responded.
Yeah.
And then
it's a win-win.
That's a win-win. And then also, like, they always say there's no bad PR, right? So the people who hate on you are actually going to be your biggest fans because they're watching everything.
And I've definitely got a few of those. You know who you are.
Yeah. So just respond with love.
Yeah.
And then see where it goes.
All right.
This has been really great.
This has been phenomenal.
Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you.
Yeah, this was so great. We'll have to kind of figure out what our part two will be because I've definitely had some repeat guests and it is so much fun for me because especially with male guests, I feel like my podcast sometimes can tend to be a little more female heavy because I'm just grew up in all girls environment. So it's easier for me to connect with women. But I'm like, I want this to be a podcast of the people, everyone. I don't want it to just be a woman-owned podcast, you know?
Okay.
So, I want everyone to be able to come here and talk and just relate because we're all people in the end of the day.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So thank you guys so much for listening or watching. And if you're not already watching, you can find this on Spotify or YouTube. And if you're not already subscribed, what are you doing with your life? Please go subscribe. I'm specifically trying to grow it on YouTube as well because I think that's the fastest way to monetize. So if you can do your girl a favor and subscribe, that would be great. Plus, then you're going to find about all my videos like right away and that'll be super easy for you. So if you enjoy this, please share this with a friend. I hope you guys have a great week. Let's get it. Let's go.